Greetings, my friends, and welcome to The Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. Music is a fundamental part of the human experience. Our guest is one of the world's great musicians. He is cellist Janos Starker. Mr. Starker is among the preeminent musicians of this century. As widely as Mr. Starker is applauded as one of the giants of the classical music world, he is equally appreciated as a teacher whose influence is legendary. Mr. Starker has spent his life devoted to classical music, but he never forgets what keeps music, all music, fresh.
Make sure one thing that you also sing in the shower when you are not feeling so hot. Because usually people sing when they are very happy. You should sing also when you are sad or when you are upset or something of that sort. Then you will cure yourself from stomach ulcers much better than any other medication.
Cellist Janos Starker is a member of the music world's golden class. He is internationally acclaimed as a soloist, recording artist, and teacher. Among his countless awards are both the Prix de France and the Grammy. Born in Budapest and a child prodigy, Mr. Starker was an international star before coming to America in 1948. He was principal cellist under Fritz Reiner at both the Metropolitan Opera and the Chicago Symphony. Mr. Starker has performed thousands of concerts with every major orchestra worldwide. He has also recorded extensively. He is, in addition, a distinguished professor at Indiana University. Bill Russell and I caught up with Mr. Starker, who still tours widely, in the music room at his home in Bloomington, Indiana. Janos Starker, we talk about a time of great change in which we live. Some years ago, I heard you say, "Yes, but Paula, we really can save the world with Bach." All times are times of great change, are they not? Isn't that part of what the really important Western tradition of music is about? Is that there is a thread through this time? Maybe that's what you were trying to tell me about Bach.
Well, I most likely implied at the time that music has never, classical music, my kind of music, never truly appeals to the majority of the population. At best, it's about 3-4% of the human population in best situation. Sometimes it's only 1% who perceives what music means. And my remark may have been that obviously we cannot save the world with Bach. However, our job is to make sure that this 1-3% or hopefully one day 5% of mankind will realize how enriching it is for them to listen to classical music, and day by day or year by year, how much more they get out of music. But to save the world, we cannot stop the tribes murdering each other, whether it's in Africa or in Ireland or in Turkey or in Iraq or wherever.
South Central LA.
Well, as you name all of those places, the very commonality of the human experience, both in terms of our lesser side and in terms of experiencing music, isn't that part of what gives us a chance to hold ourselves together as a species, is that there are some common denominators and this kind of really great lasting music may be one of them?
Well, I've been often quoted that I say that music is one of the very few permanent values in human existence. And what you say is true, that holds us together, but only that certain percentage is being held together. Because I often said that for us musicians, making music, hearing music, thinking music, singing is just as important as to eat, drink, procreate, and so on. But it's not true for the rest of mankind.
But isn't there a leadership function among them? I mean, there's an assumption that 1, 2, 3, 4% are also those in a position of leadership. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, some of us in the music world assumed the leadership and they were capable of leading. But whether that leadership was to make sure that people understand the deepest thoughts of Mozart, Bach, Brahms, and so on, that's highly questionable. However, we have to attempt and we have to continue our struggle, the struggle not to change anything, but to increase the number of those human beings who perceive music.
I sat in your master class yesterday, and I've been watching you perform and listening to your music for 25 years. I had, as always, a revelation yesterday. I had a new understanding of, or at least a glimpse, into how complicated this all is. I had a sense that I was watching your right brain and your left brain, your body and your spirit, and that you were trying to give all of those, give access to those things that you knew to these people that you were teaching. But there was a wholeness about it that I just hadn't experienced in the same way.
You have to understand that as recently as the last few weeks, I received two requests to write how I understand and what I mean by master classes. And I sort of postponed the answer that where I'm going to write those articles, because to begin with, I don't like the nomenclature masterclass. Because masterclass, in most of the time, is simply giving a class in public, teaching an individual in public. The true aspect of the so-called masterclasses, which I prefer to call seminars, are not so much for the person who plays, but for the ones who sit around. So it's very joyful for me to hear that you understood something way beyond that what a visitor, an auditor to a cello class supposed to understand. However, there are many elements that goes into this kind of education, let's say. I inform people about possibilities. And the individual who plays displays a certain level, a certain standard of playing. My job is to find out which are the elements that are missing or lacking at that particular individual's playing, so as to bring the attention of the audience that what are the things that they're supposed to look for when they listen to somebody play.
Having started that, let's come back to that in just a moment. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are with Janos Starker. We are in Bloomington, Indiana, and we're all going to be back in just a moment. Please do be with us.